It is my distinct pleasure to welcome Denise McDonald again. Denise has been here before, and we are always happy to see her here. Denise McDonald is an activist working for a better world through ecological sustainability, economic justice, and peace. She strives to educate and empower herself and others to understand important global issues with a focus on local solutions. She believes that all of us have the responsibility to take action for a more equitable world and the power, education, and resources to do so. She volunteers with many organizations, including Permaculture Regina, and works at the Saskatchewan Council for International Cooperation. Please welcome Denise McDonald.
Hi, everybody. I sound funny on a mic. I'm really, really glad to be here. As Jim said, I've presented here before, and I'm really thrilled that you will sit and listen to me, so thank you for that. I don't know. I'm actually going to turn it around this way. It's okay. So I have a short presentation on permaculture. Who has heard of permaculture before? Anybody? Few people. I'm kind of new to it too. I'm an environmental activist, and I'm always looking for ways to, you know, make a better world. And so a lot of the things that I do is sort of actions that I take in my everyday life, because I can actually do that. And in some cases it's hard to actually make a positive change in the world because it's kind of overwhelming. So permaculture is awesome because it's super positive and it's super action oriented, and I really, really love it. So I'm really glad that I'm involved in permaculture, and permaculture has come into my life. So, as you can see, I'm not in anybody's way, but there's, it's really holistic. So there's a lot of different areas that it touches. So, I will get to some of them. So it's a conjunction of permanent and agriculture. And you'll see that culture is in big letters because a lot of it is about, you know, humanity and culture and living on the earth. It was founded by Bill Mollison of Tasmania and David Holmgren of Australia. And in 1974, they published Permaculture 1 and Permaculture 2. So these are kind of the major textbooks of permaculture, and they're still going strong today, and people still use these books, and I've, like, read one of them as well. So this is what the whole permaculture system is based on still. They founded the Permaculture Research Institute in 1979, and so it has been going strong since then, and it is a huge movement around the world. So permaculture can be applied everywhere, anytime, all the time, in any situation. So, it's really accessible. So it is done at a grassroots level all over the world. So it's not just about farming and gardening, although, you know, it kind of morphed, I guess, from like the idea of permanent agriculture to permanent culture. So, but food production is a huge piece of it, because obviously that's one of the major things that humans need, so, and other creatures. So, it's recognized as the most adaptive and durable framework for transforming culture and agriculture in the post-industrial world, which seems like a lofty goal, but because it's so diverse and adaptable, it is possible to, change the way we live on Earth. It creates agriculturally productive ecosystems by mimicking nature. So looking at nature and seeing, because nature is super intelligent and does fabulous things, and so it mimics nature. So it sees how nature does it, and it wants to, you know, be as resilient and diverse as nature is. So going back to the culture piece, is if you don't have sustainable food, you don't have a culture, because you don't have a society, because we all need food to eat. So by having a sustainable food system, then we can move on to creating a wonderful culture. Thinks in terms of regeneration, because sustainability lacks ambition. I just think that's really funny. So not only does it want to, it doesn't want to be the status quo. It wants to improve the earth. It wants to improve the air, improve the water, improve the soil, improve the food, improve the culture. Like, it wants to, you know, actually, you know, make it better. It doesn't want it to stay the same. It wants to make it better. So it's really exciting in that way, that the techniques actually can regenerate the earth. And permaculture is about relationships. So relationships between humans and humans, and humans and earth, and ecosystems, and, you know, all about relationships between all living things. So it creates sustainable communities of plants, animals, soil, water, energies, buildings, and human needs in permanent health-giving relationships. So like I said before, it's really holistic. So it takes into consideration, it's not just about nature, it's about built environments and about like cities and all ecosystems. It's integrative and holistic, and offers solutions for almost any structural or environmental problem that humans might face. Again, pretty lofty goal, but that is how it looks at the world, and it actually, you know, does offer solutions to. I believe that there are solutions to the problems that we're facing on Earth, so permaculture is a way to find those solutions. So you can think of permaculture as a toolbox. Like I said, solutions-oriented, so think of it as a toolbox, and has filled with tools for food production and sustainable farming practices. So here we have some organic compost on the left and a worm farm on the right, vermicompost. Does anybody here vermicompost? Anybody have any worms in their life at all? What about composting? People are composters. Yeah, composting is one of the big things in permaculture, because it regenerates the soil, and the soil is our greatest asset, and so, because it captures carbon, so it can reduce greenhouse gases, but also it produces food, and that's, you know, we need good, healthy food for everybody. A focus on urban agriculture. You don't have to have a farm. You don't really have to have a lot of land. You can also do a lot of food production in urban centers, and it's becoming more and more popular in the world. It makes me sad to see, like, all the really rich farmland around Regina being, like, taken up for condo development, and because we need more urban food production than ever before, or at least peri-urban, like, near the urban centers. So I think it's unfortunate, but, of course, there's lots of community gardens. Who has a community garden? Yeah, so there's lots of community gardens, and, you know, it is happening for sure. And you can do it on your balcony. Like, there's ways of vertical. I think in really populated places like India and China and stuff, they do, like, vertical gardening, so you can actually produce food, like, in a really small space. So it is possible. So on the left, this is an aerial view. It's kind of a funny picture. It might seem weird, but I was standing on a roof. So this is ways to grow food in a, again, like in a really condensed way in a yard. So that's something like, these are people's yards. And you'll see like the key line. I don't know if I can point to it. I don't know what to do. Can I do it? No, I'll just go up there. Like here, for example, that's called, like a keyhole design, because permaculture is all about design. So that means you can walk into it and then you can still access everything. So instead of having something that's really far away over there, like it's a smart design system that makes it easy for you to use it. So anyways, that's a design system. And then on the bottom right is, I was just in Minnesota for a permaculture thing, and that is a, just on a boulevard, or right beside a building, and they do, it's an urban farm, and it was the most densely, it was just so much food being produced there, so that was called Bee Boulevard, so it was really cool. So I mean, as long as the city lets you, because sometimes there's bylaws against it, but it is possible to, like, grow food everywhere. Portland. Portland's the coolest. So they have edible pedestrian corridors. So instead of planting cement, they plant food. So it is, you know, possible to do. And this is one of my favorite. In Portland, they do a lot of de-paving. So, and then you can, you know, get out any aggression you have as well and have some fun smashing up the concrete. So I just, they're doing so many cool things in Portland, and it really, like, it creates habitat, it prevents flooding, it creates, like, land to grow food. So depaving is a really smart thing to do. And then another permaculture tool is natural or green building. Has anybody seen a straw bale house or any kind of natural buildings? Because they're just beautiful. Like, I always feel so good when I'm in them. It's just like, it's so amazing. This is in Bali, so of course we couldn't live there, but it's beautiful, so I thought I'd put it in here. Because they are beautiful. And so, like, the thing is, they're so creative, and they're just not like boxes. So that's awesome. This is a traditional rock wall, and I had the opportunity, I actually helped build that wall. A friend, Claire Fortin, I don't know if any of you know her, but she's homesteading out at Craik, and she's building an earthen home. And so she's building the rock wall, as a foundation, and then, using different techniques for the rest of the house. So anyways, it was really fun. I literally moved like 1,000 rocks. I spent a week moving rocks around. It was really, really cool. I just love rocks now. Like, I just feel so different about rocks. Like, I just love them so much. And every rock, there's no mortar. So every rock is balanced on its own. Like, every rock had to be stabled by pinning rocks underneath. Like, it was just the coolest thing. It's an old Scottish technique, because, you know, in England or whatever, they have all those beautiful rock walls, like, and that's what this is. This is how you do it, and it's no mortar, and it's, like, super sturdy. It was really neat. So this is the rock wall, and then on the top is cob, which is sand, clay, straw, and water. And of course, cob is really easy to make in Saskatchewan, because, like, the dirt is clay, so we've got lots of clay, lots of straw. So this was to hold the, like, sort of stabilize the rock wall. And then there's the framing. And then she did, like, a straw bale structure, straw bale walls. There's a example of a straw bale house. The insulation is, like, 3 feet thick. So it actually, you can actually do it in Saskatchewan, which seems crazy, but you can. And they're non-toxic. And plus, building materials are becoming kind of scarce, so we have lots of straw. And it's a good way to use straw, because otherwise it ends up being burned or just being wasted. So it's like permaculture, like zero waste, so there is no such thing as waste. So you're using something that might be considered waste, but it would be your home. Now, adobe is, I think it's sand and clay and water, and this is in Iran. And it's the largest adobe building in the world. Like, it's just gorgeous. And then also in New Mexico, there's the oldest building in the world. And it's an adobe. It's like a condo, but made of natural materials. And they, like, stay cold and warm. You know, they insulate and they let out heat. Like, they're really amazing, like, in terms of just using, like, passive ventilation and things like that. So you think that you need, like, heat. I mean, we need heating, but, like, heating and air conditioning and air exchange and all that stuff. But natural building, actually, there is ways to, you know, you don't need all that kind of energy to do it. You can use natural techniques. And then living roofs. Has anybody seen a living roof before? Yeah, like, there's one big hotel in Toronto. I forget its name right now, but they have a big roof. It's, like, one of the big ones right across from Union Station, like, Royal York. Is it the Royal York? Yeah. And it has a living roof on it, and a lot of the food they produce, they use in the restaurant. So it's also smart, because it's like super local food and it's urban. And like they say, if you were to make a lot of our roofs, like one of the biggest problems with greenhouse gases and just heating of cities and stuff is because the roofs are all black asphalt. So if you made it green, you'd like absorb water, there'd be less flooding, and then you can grow food urban, and then it's really cools down the city and you need like less air conditioning and stuff like that. So like that's the thing about permaculture, is that it's really super holistic. Like it thinks about more than one thing. It's stacking functions. It's like to cool and to grow food and, you know, all these different things. So responsible energy use. So it really looks at energy. It wants to conserve energy and to reduce our use of fossil fuels, which we're going to have to do anyways because we're at peak oil. So solar and wind. And wind, like tidal power as well, is another thing. Like this is windmills in the water, which isn't tidal power. I'm not exactly sure how tidal power works, but there is a big installation happening in the Bay of Fundy. So it is possible because, like, obviously if you've been to the beach, like, it's a lot of power. So it's just like harnessing nature instead of using fossil fuels all the time. Biogas digester. So again, taking things that might be considered waste and decomposing them, and then it creates heat. So this system fed into, he had a pizza oven, and like a pizza oven. I was in Cuba. I don't think they actually eat pizza, but like a pizza oven, like a super hot, like gets to a high temperature, and then other ovens or stoves. And so doing it with this biogas digester. So this is a really common thing to do that you can do too. And then of course, water harvesting. Like this is a small scale one, but, how much flooding there's been and how much, you know, we're getting like the rain, like just the concentration of rain in a short period of time. So if you do smart water harvesting, you like sort of store and capture it instead of it just running off and then causing flooding. So water harvesting, there's a million ways to do it. So anybody have a rain barrel? Rain barrel. Yeah, it's nice, and then you don't use like city water to water things, so it's nice. But I mean, it is, you have to, you know, you do need technology and stuff like that for it, but it is possible to do. So the built environment, that's a big one. Most of us live in cities now, and urban centers are very unsustainable. They use a lot of resources from outside, so they don't actually feel the impact of what is happening. But in Portland, of course, Portland's really cool. Subsurface gray water, composting toilets, and natural building construction is now legal. So, and I mean, I understand that there is issues for sure with these things. Like you definitely need to like, you know, have regulations and stuff around them for sure. Except most people on earth don't actually have toilets. So it's kind of ironic to think that it should be such a worry for us, but it doesn't matter for anybody else. So it's kind of ironic, but, just not wasting things, like using everything as a resource and not just like flushing it away or, you know, sending it down the stream and thinking that it's not going somewhere that's going to affect somebody else. Again, Portland. They're really cool. So city repair, intersection repair. So they have these great, and then that's the thing, I guess, about permaculture and culture is the art, like the beautiful buildings and the just, a lot of it is based on art, and art makes people feel better. So it's nice to see beautiful things all the time. Like it's actually, people are pretty easy to please. I think if something is beautifully done, it makes people feel better. And they've found in Portland, because they have a lot of these intersection repairs and a whole bunch of other stuff, but like crime's down and people are happier, and they're finding all these statistics to show that art is actually good for society. So it's really, and fun. Plus, and it's community building. I mean, everyone's just together and doing stuff together. And then it just really super builds community, which I know that you all know about building community because you're all here. And, but, you know, some people feel isolated and they need more community. So it's a regenerative design system. So, cause permaculture, people don't know what that means. Like people think, what is that? But they've been referring to it as a regenerative design system. So it's like, you know, regenerating the earth and cultures. But design is the key word in permaculture because, and then one of the main things in permaculture is it depends. Because you can't just be like, you should do X, Y, and Z, and that's the way it is. It's like, it depends. Are you urban? Are you rural? Are you cold? Are you hot? Are you, do you have lots of water? Do you have lots of wind? Like, what do you have? Like, so permaculture adapts to, it's a design based on what is happening wherever you are. So that's why design, I think, if you think about it as a design system, that kind of helps to understand what it is. Okay, so there is visible and invisible structures. So these are kinds of things that permaculture also works with. Like a lot of times you learn about, maybe you learn about a rain barrel or you learn about how to garden or whatever, but you can grow as many plants as you want, but if the people in the garden don't get along with each other, you're in trouble. So it's more about personal relationships between humans. So in permaculture, and like, it's a, the sort of a branch called social permaculture, and it's about nonviolent communication and conflict resolution and, circles. There's a lot of circles, anti-oppression training and, just different things like that, which all of us need. Like, I need that, and, you know, I think none of us are, like, I think we could all be better at that. So, the social permaculture side is super interesting, and I'm really excited to learn more about it. But it's hard. It's really, really hard. I did my permaculture design certificate in BC, and there was 50 of us, and we lived together for like 2 weeks. And watching 50 people want everything done their way all the time and not getting it was pretty funny. Like, it was actually pretty funny. Like, I, right at the beginning, I was like, and I want things done my way too, of course, because, you know, we all have control issues, but, I just at the beginning, I was like, I am not going to be mad the whole time. Like, I'm not going to be frustrated and mad and just have a bad time because I want to have a good time. Like, I really want to enjoy this. So I really just let it go. I was like, whatever. I don't even care. I mean, there was some things for sure, but I mean, by the end of 2 weeks, people could not wait to get out of there. Like, they were just like, get me out of here. People were like running for the door, you know? And that's the thing about it. Like, a lot of eco-villages fail because people don't get along with each other and everybody wants it their way. And it's like, but it's like, how do you come to consensus or how do you manage those things? Like, that's the really neat thing about permaculture too, is, just how we get along with each other. And it's really, really hard, but it's something I'm really interested in learning more about too. And actually being able to do, because it's hard. Okay. So permaculture has its like principles and different things about it. It's like a design system. So the zones. So, zone zero would be like your house. Zone one would be something you'd use every day. Zone two might be something you'd go to once a week. Zone three would be something you'd only visit once a month, maybe, and then, you know, zone four or five would be like wilderness where you would hardly ever go. So if you think about it as a farm, your herbs would be right by your house. Your compost might be in zone two because you'd only go there once a week. Your orchard would be in zone three because you only go there once every 2 weeks or whatever. So it's like whatever you use all the time is close to you, which that principle has like really helped me because like, for example, in your kitchen, like you have the drawer. And it's like, I always call it like prime real estate. It's like the best, most convenient drawer. Well, it should have things in it that you use all the time. It shouldn't have things that you hardly ever use. So just making your life easy. And it's just like designing your space and designing your life. So, and then the zone 00 is like me and how like my health and my spirituality and my, you know, nonviolent communication. And so zone 00 is kind of this like new thing that's, they're talking about more in permaculture because again, we need to get along with each other better. And then sectors. Again, this is where it depends, right? Like how much sun or shade, how much wind, how much water, what's your energy sources? Is there pollution? Is there, like in Australia, there's fires all the time. So they're really worried about fire barriers and stuff. What kind of plants grow there? Are there deer and cougars, like, I mean, moose. We had a moose the other day. Like, what's there? Landforms, like, is it, is there mountains? Is there valleys? Is there, you know, what's the elevation of the land? What's there already? Is there buildings and what can you use? And then just infrastructure in general, like, obviously, like water and sewage and stuff like that. Traffic and view. So view would be, you want it to look, like they say, you wouldn't ever put what, like your house on the most beautiful piece of the land because you want to look at that. So you'd put your house over here and then you could look at the most beautiful place. So it's like what you see, which goes to your like health and your like feeling good about looking out the window and it just makes you feel better. So, it's just taking those things into consideration. And then, ethics. Like it's one of the only design systems that focuses on ethics. And ethics is really important. And I think, like to me, focusing more on ethics would be good. So anyways, it's based on ethics. So it's really cool. So care of earth, care of people, and return of surplus or fair share. And this one is the most, you know, controversial one, I guess, out of all of them. But basically, I kind of think of it like a co-op system where, like, you might, you get what you need out of it, but then you put what you don't need back into it to make it better for everybody else kind of thing, which isn't the system that we work on at all, but it's something that permaculture wants to do. There's 12 principles. So, I'll just go through them quickly. One, observe and interact. So that's the thing. Where, what are the wildlife and where is the water coming from and how much sun is in the winter and in the summer? So you're supposed to like observe before you do any design work. You want to really observe, you know, what's happening. Catch and store energy. So that would be, you know, solar energy or, using it for your compost or whatever it is. Putting your plants on the south side so that they get more sun and, so really being conscious of your design. Obtain a yield. So you don't want it to be, it's not a negative. Like right now we're taking more out than we're putting back in. That's not permaculture. Like you want to get, you want to take less out than you're giving. So you always want there to be a yield, like a sustainable yield. Apply self-regulation and accept feedback. So that is, you might design it one way and then design it another way later if you, like you learn from your mistakes. And that's like with any project or anything that anybody ever does, any program or whatever, like don't just keep doing the same thing over and over again. Like you can actually change what you're doing. Use and value renewable resources and services. So, always, you know, avoiding using non-renewables all the time. Produce no waste. All things in permaculture are, like there's no such thing as waste. Everything is a resource. So thinking of it like that, because like waste doesn't go anywhere. Like it, you know, you think it does, but really it's still in your environment. So design from patterns to details. So like patterns would be, like one thing would be like spirals is a big one, but like if you look at the way rivers go and then if you look at leaves, they're patterned as well and they, you know, there's a reason why they do it. Like nature is really smart. So looking at the patterns in nature and then trying to pattern your, site based on that. Integrate rather than segregate. So again, stacking functions, everything should serve more than one function and they can. It's really neat. And then use small and slow solutions. Use and value diversity. Use the edges and value the marginal. So edges is a really important concept in permaculture. It's super cool. If you go to like a place, has anybody been to like a mangrove or even like a ocean where it goes from like, or salt water to fresh water or, like where there's the edge of a forest in a field. And it's like that edge is a special ecosystem where that will never happen in any other place. Like it's a really special place. And so like working on the edge or in social permaculture, they say the edge might be like something that you're uncomfortable doing or, you know, that's your edge. And that's where you, like, that's where there's a lot of value and a lot of, you just have to like use it to your advantage and really maximize the edge. And it's a really neat concept. So I love that. Creatively use and respond to change. The problem is the solution. So if you have too much water, then maybe you do like a rice field, or you do a pond, and then you have ducks, and then it's beautiful to look at, or whatever. So the problem is the solution. That's another one of the permaculture things. So permaculture provides effective solutions to environmental and social ills. And permaculture directs positive action. So that's the thing, I think, because, like, it's funny when, like I said in my bio, that I'm an activist, which I am, but an activist is against something, like, all the time. But another word from, like, permaculture is, like, an actionist. So it's, like, you're for something. Like, I'm for delicious food and beautiful art. Like, that's what I'm for. I mean, so being more positive than negative is what permaculture does. So, and then these are just some of the cool things that permaculture does. So that's it. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Denise. We're not done yet. Because I'm sure we're going to have some comments and questions and things. I'm going to go and get another mic. So I'll give this back to you, and we'll see what other people have to say and ask you.
Thank you.
Where is the city of Regina in terms of city planning incorporating any concepts related to permaculture?
I think we're probably one of the, like, on a scale of 1 to 10, we're probably a 1. I mean, I did see a guy from the city of Regina, like one of the city managers, talking about how the new developments are actually south-facing, so it's passive solar, and that they are actually doing some things. But my regret, I guess, is that before we kind of, like, exploded as a city, like, they could have just done so much. Like, I just feel like Saskatchewan could, like, I just feel like we could be world leaders, like, in all of it, like, organic food and wind energy and solar energy, and then the way our cities developed, like, I feel like we could have been models for the world. Like, I really believe that. But instead, they just did, like, grid roads and, like, terrible condos that are made out of, like, substandard materials that are off-gassing and won't last very long, and just the big box, you know, like, getting rid of the farmland and putting up big box stores. And so we're really quite far behind. And further to that, Saskatchewan is the highest CO2 emitter on Earth, so we're really part of the problem, you know? So I just wish that, like, there's just so much potential. You know, we have a petroleum research center, but we don't have a solar research center or a wind research center. We have a petroleum research center. And I'm not saying we don't need petroleum, because we do. Like, I'm not, but it's like, it would be nice if we had a combination of things instead of just, like, solely relying on petroleum, when there's so many other, you know, ways to get resources. So, and we don't have a permaculture site here. Like, one of the people in Permaculture Regina has a farm just outside of Regina, and she's doing permaculture design. So we're hoping she can be a demonstration site, because people don't get it. Like, they don't know what it is. So you need to show them. You need to be like, this is what permaculture looks like, and this is, like, the possibilities, and then people get it. But if you just say it, they're like, they don't understand it. So we have one in Regina. So, and we're trying. I mean, we'd like to, but, you know, you need access to land, and you need time, and you need resources and different things. So.
Just a quick, easy question. Did you bring materials that we can take with us, and your email address and so on?
Yeah, I actually didn't, which is, I was gonna, but I didn't. So, yes, we have permaculturegina@gmail.com. So I can email, because I have a bunch of, like, I have a zone handout and a sector handout, and just, there's a social permaculture one. Like, there's a lot of different ones that, yeah, like, I'm not sure if, like, they're actually on our website, but we do have I don't actually have the display, which is why I didn't. It's at my colleague's place. So, but and even on the internet, like permaculture, you can look, like Google it, and there's so much information out there. It's super interesting. Like, and it's anything you're interested in. Like, are you interested in water? You can do that. If you're interested in nonviolent communication, you can do that. Or you're interested in earthworks and like building things, you can do that. So, depending on what you're interested in, you know. So it's really diverse. So.
Hi.
Hi.
There we are. I worked in the architectural field for quite a long time, and I think people have a really negative view of current construction methods and condos, for example. But I can tell you that one of the newest condos in the city has a green roof and a big water cistern in the lower level for collection of storm water. And I can tell you that practically all of the construction materials today have gone to much greener practices for glues and resins, and you almost never hear of anything except water-based adhesives.
Mm-hmm.
Off-gassing is a really big deal in design today.
Mm-hmm.
And we, you know, it's paid attention to all the time. So yes, you see a house, or you see, and I'm not, don't get me wrong, I think that some of these giant McMansions are terrible and use far too much energy and so on, but there is change in the industry and in construction and in how people do things. Cities use recycled materials for paving. They, you know, it is coming in more and more all the time.
Well, that's the thing. Like, change is possible. Like, that's what gives me hope and makes me feel good about, like, I mean, I used to use, like, the smoking, like, smoking as an example of, like, a social campaign that worked, that people feel they can't smoke around kids and or people that don't smoke. Like, they can't stand by the doors anymore. And, like, so it's, like, a social campaign that worked, and exactly the same thing. Like, it is changing. It's getting way better, and it's awesome, and that is what we need, is more examples of that. I mean, I just wish it was, like, more prevalent and happening faster, but absolutely, there's so much hope, and it's wonderful to see, and so thank you for that.
Yes, Jane. I think we have a long history of doing things in this area, but maybe we don't use the new language as well as you do. Saskatchewan has a whole system of what they used to call ag reps, or agricultural representatives, who are out there teaching people how to grow food, really, is what they're doing, and teaching them better farming methods. This city has got an urban forest with every tree planted by hand. So we've, you know, done a lot of things on your map up there, but we don't give ourselves credit for those, maybe, in a way that we could. We do have wind farms in Saskatchewan, but I'm amazed at how few people know about them. I know about the Gull Lake one because it's near where I live as I was growing up. But so, you know, there are a lot of things going on, and somehow we have to get past the, yes, we produce coal here because it's a damn cold country and we need some way to stay warm. And the wind and solar is not regular enough for our long winters. We can't depend only on it at this point. So I'm hoping that you're going to be successful and get more research in that area, so that we can build on the achievements that we already have. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. Like, it depends. You know, we can't grow food here all year, and we need energy. So it depends. Like, we actually have to be higher CO2 emitters because of it's so cold here. So yeah, absolutely. And then what you were saying earlier about, like, it's like indigenous knowledge. A lot of this stuff, like the seed saving and the agricultural techniques and a lot of the water harvesting and all this stuff, they've been doing it for centuries, but it's like we're just rediscovering it, or we're learning how to implement it in a more, like, contemporary way. But it's like a lot of people do, you know, comment on, you know, when I was in Cuba at this permaculture convergence, there was all these people from, like, all over the world, and they were like, yeah, we've been doing that the whole time. Like, you know, this is not new information. Like, you guys just are figuring it out now, but we've been doing it the whole time. So yeah, like looking at indigenous knowledge and really embracing it, I just love that. Like, cause it's really smart and, you know, there is good, really good ways to do different things. And so yes, and I agree that, like I said, we need a combination of things. There's no way, one thing, it's not going to be wind. That's not going to be the answer, but it's like a combination. And depending on where you are, we just happen to be like the sunniest, windiest place in Canada. So we could be using a little more of that, you know? So, but yeah, it is definitely, there's a lot of good things happening, for sure.
On a lighter note, there's an interesting article in yesterday's Leader Post about the question of toilets. Most people don't want toilets among the rural poor because they say when they go outside to do their business, they like to look at the lions and in their relaxed conditions. In South Africa, where I'm from, children didn't start wearing pants until they started going to school. And so that the first or second day of school was usually disastrous. The place with the children would be too afraid to ask the teacher to go to the bathroom, or they didn't even know how to ask. But as a result, I didn't eat black grapes for something like 30 years. Because that was in season at the time, and this was running down the legs of some of the children. But incidentally, on the question of waste management, well, I made a study of this thing, largely human waste, and how it could be used to as a holistic venture, and secondly, something that would generate income for the city. And this was by, instead of just one, having one big plant that deals with human waste, having several around the city and from which products could grow, they refused the idea.
It's really funny that you say that, and Jim will know because we had this conversation before, and I've had this conversation like several times. There's this book called The Humanure Handbook. And it's about human waste, and it's like the greatest book ever. And it says that people that don't want to talk about human waste are fecophobes, which I think is really funny. But I've learned a lot about human waste, and like I do work in international development, and that the, the lack of infrastructure and improper disposal of waste is one of the biggest killers on earth. So it's a huge problem, but nobody wants to talk about it because there's a lot of stigma attached to it and there's a lot of shame and no one wants to talk about it. And except I do, because it's one of the biggest social issues on earth, and it needs, like, if you focused on that, you could change the world. You could actually save millions and millions of lives. So, but basically, like, we're not opposed to using like animal manure, but human manure, you have to let it sit for quite a long time. Like, you have to let it sit for like one year is usually probably good, but 2 years. All of the pathogens die. Like, it's not toxic. People think it is. And yes, if you put it in the water system, it's definitely toxic. If you dry compost it and heat it, all of the pathogens die, and it's a valuable resource. It's not, because we make it, okay, one of the funny things in the book was 3% of the Earth's water is fresh. Why shit in it? Because that's what we do. We use our fresh water, and we go to the bathroom in it, and it's ridiculous. Like, there's only so much water, and we're ruining it by not managing our waste properly. So, and again, another example is in New Zealand, there was an earthquake in Christchurch, and the whole sewage system collapsed in the earthquake. So now they have a composting toilet system where everybody has a composting toilet, because it destroyed, I mean, first of all, it's really dangerous because there's no, like, safe sanitation, and it destroyed, like, the water system, and it was really, really dangerous, and people were getting sick, but it's an emergency preparedness thing. It's very possible that that could happen here. I mean, with flooding, while they just put a bunch of sewage into the, well, they put sewage into the water system anyways, but, and then they put a bunch of chemicals in it too. Like, it's just, like, I get that you need to, like they dilute it or whatever, but it's ironic to put human waste and a bunch of chemicals into the water that goes downstream, because we get Calgary and Edmonton's sewage, and then we give our sewage to Winnipeg. And I actually went and visited the sewage treatment plant, so that's why I know this. But yeah, and it is a resource. It's compost. It is like, in China, they use it as night soil. Like, that's what they call it. But they just spread it raw, which is dangerous. That's absolutely dangerous. But if you compost it, and you know the liquid goes out of it, you compost it, compost heats up, all the pathogens die, and you have beautiful soil. That's what it is. It's the food we eat. So, like, it's not like we don't use manure in other ways, but so human manure, but there's so much stigma attached to it, and it just, we need to just change our attitudes about it. And they do have World Toilet Day, so I was like, World Toilet Day, and I always want to like celebrate it, and nobody wants to celebrate with me. But I'm thinking that, and then I said to Jim, it's like, I have a shtick now. It's like, my shtick is talking about human manure, but it's just something I'm really interested in, and it's really, really important, and like, it could change the world. So I'm super glad you brought it up. Thank you. And it would really help a lot of people in developing countries and on reserves, and just if there was a disaster. Like, it's really important for disasters as well, which we're having more and more of. So, yeah, we need to end the stigma about human manure. So thank you for letting me talk about it.
I think that's a great point to stop. if we look at our candles there, you can see we've gone way over time.
Okay, well, thank you for...
There's a lot of enthusiasm here. Thank you very, very much for coming and sharing with us.
Thank you.